To Division 6 and Council, I see that you are in place 4. Where's my docket? G&A Land LLC versus City of Brighton, is that correct?
Correct.
And Council, do you have any questions regarding our procedures or the time or the timing mechanism or anything of that nature? All right, then the court will call G&A Land versus City of Brighton, case number 08 CA 2192, and you may begin when you're ready, Council.
Some pages.
Yes.
I think the chief took him.
Oh, okay,
thanks.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm pleased to be here this morning. I have the honor this morning of representing the Dawsons and the Taylors. The Dawsons are present. The Taylors hold under, you know, under an entity called G&A Land and Cattle. That stands for Gino and Anna Marie. It's a mother and son who own the piece of property adjacent to the Dawsons.
Council, could you enter your appearance, please?
I'm sorry. My name's Tim Flanagan, and I represent both landowners.
Thank you, Mr. Flanagan.
With me is Catherine Eubank, my firm, who wrote the brief. The this morning, we have an opportunity to address a real governmental abuse of the power of condemnation. In this case, my clients have labored under a cloud on the title of their property for 5 years. We just passed the 5th anniversary of the notice of intent letter that my clients received from the City of Brighton, giving them, that's the first stage, as you're probably aware, in a condemnation case in Colorado. Cases in condemnation cases in Colorado don't begin with the filing of a petition to condemn, because you have to have good faith negotiations prior to having the statutory ability to condemn. You have to, under the Colorado statutes, as soon as the condemning authority is aware that they intend to take a piece of property, they have to give written notice. We call it a notice of intent letter in the jargon of the business, a notice of intent letter to the landowners. Now, in this case, there were actually written communications that preceded the notice of intent letter. There were offers from an undisclosed principal, and then we found out it was the City of Brighton. And once you know the City of Brighton is trying to buy your property, and these are total takes, not partial, total takes, you know, if one has any sense, that they have the ability to condemn, and you have a serious problem. Because as a landowner, once the city gives you official notice that intends to take your property, you have to disclose that to any prospective purchaser of your property. You have lost the unfettered ability to alienate your property. You, and in the nomenclature of these cases, we believe the city has then exercised not dominion, but they have exercised control. It's dominion and control is usually the standard here. They have acquired by their notice of intent a free option to purchase the property to the exclusion of anyone else as a practical matter, because you have to disclose the city's notice to you that they have taken or they intend to take your property. And once you do, as happened in the underlying cases, no third party is going to buy your property or lease your property. Of course, you're aware of the fact my clients both lost the opportunity to lease their property for sand and gravel mining. They're in an active sand and gravel market. There's a mine across the river from them. They have property next to the South Platte River, which makes it ideal for a sewage treatment plant, but they also have sand and gravel deposits. There's a mining company just to the north of them. That mining company approached them, but as soon as they learned to drill their property to find the extent of the sand and gravel reserves, but as soon as they found out the city had issued a notice of intent, they didn't want to deal with it. The Dawsons here had an opportunity to sell their property during the past 5 years. They live, they're right between US 85 and the South Platte River. US 85 is the old road up to Greeley. There's a number of, we're dealing on the northern stretch of Brighton, just at the northern boundary. There's a number of heavy equipment auction locations out there. One of the neighbors lost their lease. They approached the Dawsons. They wanted to buy their property to run their auction business. But as soon as it was disclosed that the city of Brighton had them in their sights, that opportunity walked away. So in Colorado, you are prohibited from taking or damaging, in our Constitution, take or damage private property without just compensation. We believe that we have stated a claim for promissory estoppel. And I think the best support, the Supreme Court recently in the Wheat Ridge Urban Renewal case, indicated that while you cannot force a government to condemn, we understand that, the decision to condemn rests with the government. They have initiated the process by sending out the notice of intent letter. But at some point, they have to stop the process if they're not going to proceed. Here, it's gone on for 5 years. This limbo has gone for 5 years.
Mr. Flanagan, so is it your position any time the government initiates a process, it constitutes a promise?
In this case, where the government proceeds by a resolution that specifically describes this these two properties and instructs staff to negotiate for them or acquire it by condemnation if necessary, yes, that's a promise. And the letters that came from the attorneys for the city that said, here's an offer or we want to negotiate with you, but if we can't acquire it voluntarily, we'll have to resort to legal proceedings. When they initiate the process, I think they either have to stop it or finish it. We've asked them to do one or the other. Withdraw the resolution so that we don't have to tell people that we're in the sights of a municipality, or finish it. Do one or the other.
What's your understanding of why they haven't done that? Five years seems like a long time.
Well, yes, Your Honor. I've been doing this for 35 years, and frankly, I have never seen a situation where a government has taken more than 6 months after these letters come out. If they have a real project, they proceed. Now, in this case, the city of Brighton probably by itself cannot build this regional water treatment plant. It entered into an IGA, an intergovernmental agreement, with Denver Metro Sewage. Denver Metro Sewage operates the big sewage treatment plant at the Sand Creek in the river at about 270 across South Platte River from the big power plant of public service companies. You drive by there. It's at capacity. They've got to build a second unit. They've done planning studies. Unfortunately, we're in a good place to build the second unit. They've decided that's where it's going to go, Dr. Cog and others. And it's one thing to plan. It's one thing to do studies, to look at six or seven alternates. But when you get a letter that says, we're coming and we're going to take your property by one means or another, now, I'm sorry, in answer to your question, I think there was problems in between the city of Brighton and Denver Metro Sewage under the agreement. And for a while, there was also an issue about return flows of the city of Thornton. As you're probably aware, a lot of the cities have foreign water, and so when they file these augmentation plans, they get a point of discharge to the river, and they've got the old sewer plant, and therefore, some entities would be precluded because of their old plans from having it at the new plant. So actually that case went to the Supreme Court in the interim. A settlement was reached, and part of this water is a testament to water rights. Is going to be pumped back upstream to be returned to the river. So there have been issues.
I don't take too much of your time. Just I understand. So you're saying there's a governmental problem and they're just it's on hold for some reason?
Well, no, we've been contacted again by Denver Metro Sewage, and they're starting the process over yet a third time. We've gone through two sets of environmental analysis, two sets of appraisals, and we're about to start into a third set.
I'd like to ask you, turning back to your legal issue, you seem to have two theories. One is the inverse condemnation, and the other is promissory estoppel. I apologize for not being familiar with this Wheat Ridge renewal case. That was a promissory estoppel case?
No, what, in that case, there was a written contract, not a verbal contract. There was a written contract, as often happens in urban renewal, between a developer and a city, where the Urban Renewal Authority said, we will take this property by condemnation. They decided not to do it. So then the developer sued them. And the same theory went up in, out of Jefferson County, saying you can't force the government to condemn, but you can, and the trial court issued an injunction against them, and the Supreme Court eventually determined, after this court reviewed it, that the city was answerable in damages for failing to condemn. We can't control the decision about whether to condemn or not, but we have a remedy if they don't proceed with their threat to condemn. What we're asking you to do is either make them go away or make them proceed. Get us out of limbo. We've been in purgatory now for 5 years. And we believe that these letters are a promise that we relied upon to our detriment. That's the promissory estoppel under inverse condemnation. It's the constitutional right of don't take or damage. They have damaged us. There is a separate and apart from compensation for our property, there's 5 years of loss of use. And that's what we see. I'd like to reserve the remainder.
Good morning. Patrick Wilson, registration 26303 on behalf of the City of Brighton. The key issues in this case, as Judge Rothenberg identified, are the promissory estoppel claim and whether or not there was a taking. Those the two determinations can be made as a matter of law, and they were in this case. The first one, was there a promise? That's a duty. Was there a duty undertaken by the City of Brighton? And the plaintiffs have gone through and, as based upon their amended complaint, have outlined a number of actions taken by Brighton. The passing of a resolution, the sending of the notice of intent letters, offering to purchase on two occasions the landowner's property, hiring right-of-way agents and engineers and whatnot, and conducting a variety of other pre-condemnation activities. However, if you look through all of the documents cited by the plaintiffs, there is no promissory intent. And that's the key thing. Plaintiffs would have the court infer a promise simply based upon our manifestation of intent. They cite the restatement for this concept that the manifestation of intent creates a binding and enforceable promise. That's not the law. The law is that a manifestation of intent that indicates a promissory commitment. The commitment must be there. And none of the documents in the record and none of the allegations in the amended complaint express that type of commitment. The language in the letters is conditional. It is a threat to condemn. There was a threat to condemn. There was an expression of an intent that we may be acquiring your property. The city's required to give that notice before it files condemnation action.
So, Mr. Wilson, now let me ask you this. How long can the City of Brighton or any condemning authority hold this manifestation of intent cloud over a landowner's property?
I'm not sure there's a set determination. Five years, 4 years when the court made its determination, the trial court made its determination, does seem to be a long time. But realize you're talking about three agencies, City of Brighton, Metro Wastewater, and South Adams Water and Sewer, trying to coordinate for a multi-million dollar regional water treatment plant. And there are a lot of issues as to funding, as to Dr. Cog approval as to where it can be, water quality issues. There are a lot of issues. And so, if anything, Brighton maybe Gate was too forthcoming with the Dawsons and the Taylors. Perhaps it said we're trying to keep them up to speed on what was going on. Perhaps what they should have done is been quiet and elusive and secretive about this. But no, they went out and gave the landowners as much notice as possible. And quite honestly, now that Mr. Flanagan is right, Metro Wastewater is considering acquiring these same properties. It's not in the facts before the court right now. But Brighton will not be able to relinquish that intent until the properties are acquired, whether it be by it or by Metro or some other thing, so that this plant can be built. I would submit to you that all of our properties, all private property, is subject to the power of eminent domain. And if Brighton has an option on these landowners' property, it has an option on all property. because private property is held subject to the power of eminent domain, along with reasonable zoning, police power restrictions, taxation, and also a sheet, I think, is the fourth kind of criteria or restriction on the free use of condemnation.
I agree with that, but it is a little bit different that Brighton has indicated or manifested its intent publicly or in a manner that requires these folks to tell potential buyers or lessees mm-hmm. about the pending condemnation. And you would concede, would you not, that that does cloud their title or give them a problem with using their property in the manner in which they might want to use it?
Well, I would suggest that in response to that assuming that the landowners do have an obligation to disclose these letters and this resolution, it's not any promise by Brighton that triggered that disclosure requirement. It was the fact that Brighton was considering acquiring this property for a public purpose that would trigger any type of disclosure requirement. It is the fact that Brighton might acquire this property that might have scared away any alleged purchaser or lessee. So it wasn't the promise that led to any type of disclosure requirement or any type of detrimental reliance. It was the fact that the property is subject to condemnation. Now, if that disclosure requirement is made, I think that the landowners do still have full access of their property. They were never dispossessed of the ownership or possession or use of their property. Nothing that Brighton did restricted their use of the property. What may have been the effect on potential purchasers or potential lessees, that's the marketplace reacting to it. But as the Fickey case pointed out, as the trial court pointed out in its order, all of our property is subject to condemnation. And if Brighton can go ahead and file a condemnation action and then abandon, and all during that interim period, there's no claim for compensation, no claim for breach of a promissory estoppel, then we certainly can abandon or withdraw or not proceed with filing the actual condemnation action.
Well, but the legislature has provided for some remedy in abandonment cases, correct? Isn't there a statute that gives home landowners something?
I'm not sure if there's a statute. There's a statute that says if a condemnation case is dismissed on failure to have the authority, attorney's fees can be awarded. There's the 130% rule if a case goes all the way through. Case law has developed, I believe, the Johnson versus Climax case and other cases have suggested that if a condemnation case is actually filed, the landowner can recover its costs. So if it goes out and hires an appraiser and files an answer, or you know, proceeds along those lines and goes through, is drugged through the litigation. But none of the cases suggest that there's a remedy until the city or the condemnor actually initiates a legal action to acquire the property.
I'd like to go back to Judge Hawthorne's question. Obviously, there's a balance here, and no one is questioning the city's ability to do this. What they're saying is, at some point, there becomes an abuse to the landowner where they feel at least they have an obligation. I don't know what the law of fraud is. Certainly, these days, you must disclose if you have radon or any or termites or any other kind of thing, you certainly would want to disclose. Or maybe it's public knowledge even. They've alleged, remember the stage we're at, this is not post-trial. This was dismissed on a summary judgment motion to dismiss. So at some point, does a landowner have a remedy? I think I was hearing Judge Hawthorne ask you, can this go on indefinitely, another 2 to 5 years without any remedy? What if they lose their property in foreclosure for their inability to rent it? I've been long-winded, but you know
right.
What I'm asking.
I do, Judge. Thank you. I'll try to answer as best I can. I'm not aware of any Colorado authority providing a landowner with a remedy in this situation. I'm not disagreeing with you. Under certain facts, there may be a justification for a remedy, but one does not exist now under Colorado law. And I would also submit to you that based upon the facts as alleged in the amended complaint, the actions taken by Brighton don't rise to a level of either a promise or a taking. Interference with their property rights, there may be some interference. but it doesn't rise to the level to trigger one of those things. I think the district court saw what the actual level of interference was. There were these public statements, but nothing was recorded in the real property records of Weld County where this property is located. No regulation was imposed. In fact, these properties sit outside of the city limits, so Brighton doesn't have any control over the use of these properties. There were statements made to the landowners. I understand that those may have had to have been disclosed, but I think that the Ficke case recognizes that at some point, landowners have to put up with that as an incident of owning real property in the state of Colorado, and that's true throughout the country.
I seem to recall from the briefs that there was a sign posted on the property about the potential condemnation. Was that sign posted by agreement between the parties, or how did that occur?
I'm so glad I had the trial court correct the record, because if you look in the pleadings, the trial court did make the statement initially that the sign was posted on the property. And then there was a correction to the final order that was not opposed by the landowners, where he said that it was actually posted on property adjacent to the landowner's property. So there was no physical entry at that point. Now, I'd like to turn to the takings case real quickly, because really there's three possible avenues for the landowners to proceed on this. A physical taking, and with the sign issue not being relevant, that's not even alleged here. There's a regulatory taking, and then there's this damaging clause under the Colorado Constitution. And the case law is clear under this damaging clause. That is limited to landowners whose property is not being condemned, but who are damaged by public improvements being built on land abutting or adjacent to their land. And that's not the case here. There are no facts alleging that, and there are no facts in existence that would support either a damaging or a physical taking. Landowners have suggested that their claim is not one for regulatory takings. It's on page 34 of their opening brief. Well, if it's not a regulatory taking, it's not a physical taking, it can't be a damaging, there isn't a cause of action. There's not always a remedy for every situation.
So is it your position under the Colorado Constitution that even though there may be damage to a property interest, that does not require compensation?
I would suggest that it has to fall under one of the three established branches as either a regulatory taking, a physical, or damaging. And I think that probably the best way to analyze this is to look at it as a regulatory taking. And a regulatory taking would either have to show that the landowners were left with no economic use, no economic value left in their property. And the court found that the plaintiffs had full access, unencumbered use of their property. They might have had to disclose to third parties that the property was being considered for a wastewater treatment plant, but they weren't deprived of all of their economic use. The other branch that you can go down is the Penn Central kind of ad hoc, factually intensive kind of analysis that looks at the economic impact for the landowner, the character of the government action, and the level of interference with investment-backed expectations. And although that is considered a factual intensive inquiry, it doesn't mean those types of claims can't be dismissed as a matter of law when they don't allege facts sufficient. You have to have a very significant interference with a property right before that kind of fat ad hoc kind of taking can be established.
Is this residential property or is it agricultural property? I think it was 28 acres. Is that
the correct? Dawson property is approximately 28 to 30 acres. It's zoned agricultural. The Dawsons live on the property and I think raise livestock on it. The G&A property is vacant and it's an investment property that's been vacant since they purchased it in 2001.
And what's the size of that property?
It's, I think, 20 acres approximately. 20 and 30 acres. These properties are contiguous, both bounding the South Platte River, and these are the properties that were identified for this wastewater treatment plant.
I'm having trouble seeing how this could be a regulatory taking, and I don't think Mr. Flanagan's alleged that it was regulatory. In animus, it was regulatory, and the court construed the damages clause very narrowly. What supports your argument that the Supreme Court would limit anything else but regulatory? In other words, they limited the damages clause, but it was a regulatory case.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we expand that to other cases not regulatory? Do you understand my question?
I'm not sure I do.
In other words, you're saying there are two kinds, a physical taking and a regulatory taking.
Correct.
Under the regulatory section, we have animus.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't a regulatory taking.
Okay.
At least they're not even alleging it.
Okay, and I guess I don't know what kind of claim this is then. If it's those are the three that I've been able to identify.
I think that's what I'm asking you.
Yeah, I don't think that there's anything outside of those established, the damaging, physical, or regulatory, and that would be the limit. I think just real briefly on the 1983 claim, which was a third claim for relief, the facts that support that 1983 claim are really the same as the taking. And the 14th Amendment claim, which is the only one that's included in the 1983 claim, has to be a takings claim. There's no allegations of procedural due process violation or a substantive due process violation. It's the plaintiff's attempt to have the Fifth Amendment apply to a state action. And so because this Fifth Amendment claim, called a 1983 claim, is based upon the same facts as their inverse condemnation claim, they're one and the same. And the trial court properly concluded that the 14th Amendment claim was subsumed into the inverse the takings claim. If there's no further questions, that's all I have. Thank you for your time.
And counsel, I am going to be aware of rebuttal in this case, unlike the first case on the docket.
Well, see, you learn from your mistakes. I don't always do that.
You have.
That's why I keep coming back here.
You have 4 minutes and 42 seconds, counsel.
Let's start with what kind of a taking it is.
It's not a regulatory taking. And it's not a physical taking. It is a third type of taking. It is a taking of a part of the bundle of rights, the sticks we all heard about in law school. One of those sticks is the right to sell your property, the right of alienation. We don't have unfettered alienation. We've lost that stick to the city of Brighton. It took it and it won't pay for it. And that's the taking. It's the damage under the state constitution, take or damage. There's temporary damage and there's permanent damage. It's not any different than in a regular take where they take a strip to build an easement and a temporary take for construction. And so if they take it for a year, this additional land, they pay for it for a year. They've taken my property for 5 years. And that was our theory of damages underneath. Now, the legal theory is either promissory estoppel or inverse condemnation because of a temporary take of the right to alienate this property. Those are the two theories. The 1983, I agree, is similar to the second leg of that. So that's our claim. Now, underneath, if you read they fell into the same problem of it's got to be A or B. It's not an animus taking. It's not a physical taking. We admit that. So no remedy. That's the box the trial judge was in.
Mr. Flanagan, what concerns me is any time there's going to be an initiation of a condemnation proceeding, there's going to be a restraint on alienation, as you were just suggesting. So wouldn't that just swallow the whole process of condemnation?
No, every property is subject to the government's ability to take it. I understand that. The king can take the property, has to pay for it. But when the king initiates the process, what we're saying, it either has to complete the process or stop the process at some point. Give us our property back after being under this duty to disclose. There's two court of appeals cases that say in a business transaction we have to disclose material facts. We would get sued if we sold to somebody and said, oh, we forgot. And there are cases where there hasn't been a disclosure in other jurisdictions of a notice of intent. I haven't found one here. So once we get that letter, of course we have to tell people that the city of Brighton is interested, has given us that notice. Then we're in the jam. As to the sign, yeah, it's the future home. It's going to be here. Now, the sign wasn't put on our property. It was put on a city easement right next to our property, but it says here's the future home of the sewage treatment plant. This is just dozens of pieces of evidence that point to the fact that the city of Brighton is acting like it owns it, it says it owns it, to third parties, and we're in the sites, and there's nothing we can do with the piece of property. So at some point, it's got to stop. 5 years, I think, is too much. What is reasonable? I'd think about the statute of limitations for either a negligence or a contract claim, 2 or 3 years. Doesn't that is what has happened in other jurisdictions. There's nothing here in this state. So I would suggest that you can't go on forever, that you would look at a statute of limitations for this sort of action, and I would suggest 2 or 3 years. There's got to be some limit. You got to tell the gorilla to go away. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. And that concludes the arguments on this case. The matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.